Well, welcome everybody. Nice to see you on a Halloween evening. I wasn't sure how many people to expect. Thought you might be out trick-or-treating or going to parties. But this is a kind of special evening for us. We celebrate a very old ceremony. Which has been translated usually into English as kind of the Hungry Ghost ceremony. So I'll talk a little bit about that in my talk, and then I'll explain what we're going to do in the ceremony. Well, when I sat down to write this, I began to think, well, why do we do ceremonies? In part, I think ritual and ceremonies kind of connect us with those who came before, our ancestors. These ceremonies often remind us of their struggles and insight that arose. And from that lineage that has come from their struggles, we have benefited. We remember. And remembering is the opposite of dismembering or unmembering. You know, so much of our daily life, and certainly the present political climate, is about me and mine and disconnecting from the other, from the world out there. But our Zen practice is about making us one with the other. Making us one with the world, making us whole again. And rituals and ceremonies can be hollow, and they can be meaningless, and they can be rich, expressing what cannot be easily put into words. Rituals and ceremonies can be sources for us of resilience, bringing ease and awareness to what we have pushed aside in our daily life. In our tradition, we remember not only the pleasant, healthy, and wholesome, but also we remember the shadow side, the parts we wish would shrivel up and vanish. Because only in seeing clearly can we transform. In the Hungry Ghost ceremony that we'll be doing, we acknowledge our own shadows. We acknowledge the shadows of our society. And we invite into our hearts those whose society has forgotten or wishes to forget. And we share a meal. We share a meal the best that we can. In the Buddhist tradition, the shadow side is at times referred to as hungry ghosts. Hungry ghosts are beings that are never satisfied. And they're depicted with long throats and kind of huge stomachs that can never be filled. I first saw images of hungry ghosts when I was a young man living in Japan. I think I was 19 or maybe had just turned 20 at the time. And a Japanese friend of mine took me to a famous temple one weekend. And after seeing the beautiful garden and the golden Buddha hall, we walked along a corridor looking at some of the side rooms with very elaborate paintings on the sliding screens. I remember one set of screens had these golem-like creatures with kind of round, buggy eyes and itsy-bitsy little red mouths and long, thin necks. They were naked, pale, with swollen stomachs, and I remember kind of like claw-like hands and feet. My friend didn't speak much English, and I spoke no Japanese at the time. And actually, I don't think he knew much about Buddhism. He told me if I wasn't good, they would eat me up. And for a long time, though, I wondered, what were those creatures that were painted on the screens in that temple? What did they represent, and what were they doing in that very beautiful temple anyway? And later, I found out that these are creatures of perpetual craving, unable to ever to experience satisfaction. It's kind of like us, in some ways. No matter how hard they try, they can never satisfy their desires. The tiny mouths and long, thin necks means they can never get enough nourishment to gratify their large bellies. In traditional Buddhist cosmology, these beings make up what's known as the hungry ghost realm, one of the six levels of existence into which a being can be born. The other realms include, of course, our realm, the human realm, heavenly realm, animal realm, hell realms. And maybe you've seen that Tibetan tanka or pitcher, the wheel of life, kind of held by this demon-like creature called Yama. And it illustrates the qualities of all of these different realms that of our life. And these realms can also be considered not just as places we may be reborn into, but as illustrations of our states of mind. As we shift from contentment to craving to anger to lust to despair, they are offered as perhaps psychological and mythological descriptions of different potential aspects of our own life. Anyway, the hungry ghost realm has a special place in the Buddhism of China and Japan. Each year, a ceremony is done in most temples to acknowledge the hungry ghosts and offer them some nourishment, to bring them ease. And we do this ceremony around Halloween, and it is a kind of symbolic feeding of all the hungry ghosts, those within and those without. A number of years ago, Dr. Gabor Mate, a physician in Vancouver, working downtown Eastside, he wrote a book called In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, Close Encounters with Addiction. In our society today, we all know of someone struggling with addiction. Perhaps with alcohol or drugs, but also perhaps struggling with compulsive working, eating disorders, multiple sexual partners, obsessive internet use. So many ways we try to numb the inner hunger, which never seems to be quite satisfied. Hungry ghosts are certainly not far away. And then there's our own hungry ghosts that live perhaps inside of us. Can we see our own relentless hunger? I've noticed, for example, how often a hungry ghost arises in me. I can be sitting down, minding my own business, and out of nowhere, a voice calling for a coffee, a cracker, something to read, a bit of distraction arises. Have you experienced this too? And sometimes the voice is very insistent and very demanding. I'm bored. Do something about it. I need to watch TV. I need to read a novel. I need to get outside. I need to buy something. And sometimes the voice is more desperate. I can't do this anymore. I want a different life. I am so unhappy. I need to be somewhere else. I need a new relationship, a new job. I need a new life. Hungry ghosts arise calling for things we don't have, calling for things to be different than they are, calling for an end of what is often an unnamed ache inside. And sometimes, as I said, the craving is pretty trivial, and sometimes the craving washes away all sense of contentment. One quality, though, that all hungry ghosts share is the belief or thought that happiness, my happiness, depends on getting. Sometimes we can laugh at the internal ghost that calls out for another cookie, or sometimes we lay awake at night with abiding hungers that seem impossible to fulfill. The mantra of the hungry ghost always begins, "If only." And of course, today it's not only the inner hungry ghosts that call out for more. Mainstream media constantly tries to create more hungry ghosts, new hungry ghosts for us to work with. In the movie Wall Street, you ever see that movie Wall Street? I remember Michael Douglas says, "Greed, for lack of a better word, is good." And while perhaps not many of us would express this so starkly, isn't this the message we see all around us? Ads don't express contentment with one's life, but only with the right material acquisition can contentment and happiness be possible. That's what ads tell us, right? The right toothpaste, the right deodorant. It's endless. The right diapers. David Loy, a Buddhist scholar and teacher, writes about consumerism as a religion. He takes what religious studies scholars call a functionalist approach. In other words, discussing what function or functions religious activities have in our lives. And he argues, and I think quite well, that just as Buddhism or Christianity offers a basic view about who we are and how we should relate to the world around us, consumerism also offers the same. David Loy points out that consumerism is a kind of faith that teaches us that growth and global trade, which is often subsidized global trade, for example, will eventually benefit everyone and bring happiness. And another key article of faith that he points out that consumerism stresses is that growth should not be limited. The economy can and must continue to grow. And the only way for this to happen is if we become ever more hungry ghosts, fueled by endless desires and needs created by advertising. That's his thesis. And I was doing a quick internet search today, and according to Digital Marketing, one of these groups that looks at ads and things like that, these experts estimate that most Americans are exposed to between 4,000 and 10,000 advertisements each day. TV, internet, billboards, everything. How different this is from our earlier Zen ancestors. Ryokan was a quiet and a little bit eccentric Soto Zen monk. He lived in the 1700s up to the mid-1800s, and he lived much of his life as a hermit. And he's really remembered loved in Japan for his calligraphy and for his poetry, and for his views on living a simple life. So I'd like to read you a poem of his. It goes like this. Without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. Plain vegetables can soothe hunger. A patched robe is enough to cover this bent old body. Alone, I hike with a deer. Cheerfully, I sing with village children. The stream beneath the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountaintop fits my heart. Now, of course, part of our human nature is to have desires. Desires are natural and wholesome when they're held within our values of sufficiency, sharing, kindness, and generosity. The hungry ghost arises when we succumb to the whispers of enticement from without or the unmet needs from within. When the hunger we feel is unexamined, the hungry ghost that arises is often fixated on a substitute to satisfy that hunger. Drugs, approval, sexual encounters, alcohol, work, extreme volunteerism, almost anything can be used to help soothe the gnawing ache we feel. But there'll never be enough to end it if that hunger is unexamined, because we're trapped, confined, and prevented from living from a deep sense of presence and love unless we understand our own hunger. So at the very heart of the hungry ghost is a hole. Now, earlier I said hungry ghosts can never get enough nourishment to gratify their large bellies. So whether subtly or not, we do sense a lack, a disconnection from others and from the world. And caught in this craving, we chase after substitutes that can't possibly fulfill that hollowness inside us. The only way is to see clearly what this hunger is, to see clearly the nature of our distress, and to question the reaction of our own hungry ghost to reach out for more and more and more. If we don't do this, we're just drinking salt water to quench our endless thirst. Our practice on the cushion is our refuge. First, we sit, and we come to deeply know the nature of our hunger. And then with mindfulness and compassion, we can begin to address it. Acknowledging that substitutes will never satisfy our deep need, we bring forth courage and begin the journey of returning to our true home, which has always been right here. The Persian poet Rumi wrote this famous poem, which you've probably heard before. This is how a human being can change. There's a worm addicted to eating grape leaves. Suddenly he wakes up. Call it grace, whatever. Something wakes him, and he's no longer a worm. He's the entire vineyard, and the orchard too. The fruit, the trunks, a growing wisdom and joy that doesn't need to be devoured. How do we bring a sense of ease to our hungry ghosts? Remember that what we practice repeatedly is strengthened. We practice seeing the nature of our hungry ghost. We practice seeing our reactions and the consequences. We then courageously make a different choice. Mindful and aware, we notice the presence of our hungry ghosts. We treat them with tenderness and compassion, not feeding them with substitutes. We reach out to offer them true nourishment as we can. And this is not easy. At times, the only thing we can offer is acceptance. I see you. I hear you. But sometimes that's exactly what satisfies. It's enough. And sometimes we will offer our love. We will offer and listen carefully to what will be the true nourishment. In our sitting, we need to ask what the hungry ghost needs most. What does it truly need? And then we offer it over and over again. Just as tonight, we will offer nourishment to the hungry ghosts that are here. And so I'll end my talk there. Thank you for listening. And I'm going to kind of just talk a little bit about what we're going to do in this ceremony.